Morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHH FM 103.5 FM live stream, newhavenimprint.org. It's been dark days in New Haven. They're about to get much darker. We have a guest today who can help us maybe make some sense of it and moving forward what some people on the front lines are going to need to do. His name is Sue Greatwall. He's one of the great entrepreneurs of the tech age in New Haven. He has a business based on Church Street that works around the world and is geared up for moments just like these public health crises. He's the CEO and co-founder of Viosi, originally known as Greatwall, which sets up platforms, online platforms for first responders and other people dealing with emergencies in government, in the private sector, to share vital information and feedback in real time. Good morning, Mr. Greatwall. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Paul.
Now, did I accurately summarize what your company does?
Yes, perfectly.
All right. So you got those dashboards. I always think of it as the dashboards because when you were getting going about a decade ago, I guess not quite a decade, 2011, we had Hurricane Sandy. And all of a sudden, everyone was talking about your platform and the Emergency Operations Center in New Haven government in the basement there, 200 Orange, and other people out in the field. They were communicating with each other and sharing the vital information in real time. And dealing with saving lives. So what is your take on this crisis now? How does this fit in with other public health crises you've been monitoring for years around the globe? How big is what's happening now and how prepared are we to deal with it?
Well, I can speak for the first part, which is that this is truly unprecedented and it's on a scale that we could only look at in science fiction. It is hard to believe that it is actually happening to us right now. I mean, to even imagine something on this scale is just mind-boggling. And it's almost like we're living in history right now on a scale that we could never even imagine. I mean, again, I mean, it brings to mind, I mean, definitely the 2019 pandemic in which you read about bodies flowing down the Ganges and a pandemic that actually started in Kansas and then spread all over the world. So, you know, these pandemics know no boundaries, and we probably should have been better prepared for it. But whatever it is, and right now it's up to all of us to realize the enormity of this situation and to understand that this is, I mean, not just not normal, it's beyond imagination. I mean, we've gone through, for example, a Hurricane Sandy. So if you think of these disasters for us, like we think of them as small, I mean, like localized disasters, for example, or tornado is generally localized, a fire or something like that. Those are localized disasters and affect some people. Then the next level comes, we have hurricanes that go up the East Coast and they affect a lot of people. This thing is beyond anything like that. Just beyond, it's just
worldwide. So what does that mean for communication among first responders and others on the front lines? What kind of work are you doing about this that you've learned from the past and how's that gonna help save lives?
Again, I mean, the key in all these matters is understanding the situation. So figuring out where the problem lies and also not just the problem, you're going to have a lot of problems, so prioritizing those problems and then having the resources that you can assign to them to basically deal with the problem. So what we do is just that. So we provide a platform for people to sort of send in the information from out in the field to some kind of central body while it's shared with everybody. And then from that, determining what kind of resources that need to be applied and actually applying them. And so our first, for example, like our first brush with this was with Hurricane Sandy, where we were told like 6 hours before to start, Rick Fontana says, "Hey, we're going to use your stuff." So we scrambled.
He's the emergency operations chief,
emergency manager here in New Haven. And so we go in there. And so the first thing we did was with call takers. So what happens with these emergencies? People start calling into the city, and you really separate calls from the 911 calls, because 911 calls deal with sort of a personal, sort of, you know, police or basically like health ambulancing. These are different from that. These are things like a tree fell on my house or a tree fell on this and I don't have power, those kinds of things. And so people start calling in, and the first thing you do is you start sort of, writing down what's happened. And then you kind of get a picture of what's going on, and then you direct the services, whether it's UI or your parks department, to these places. So what the system like ours enables you to do is to digitize this incoming a bit of information. And, you know, we've had some revolutionary things like Google Maps that allow us to do things that were not possible even 10 years ago. So for the Hurricane Sandy, the teams in the Emergency Operations Center started taking these calls and started going online and marking places where a tree had fallen. The first thing it did was it sort of stopped people from duplicating tickets. So for example, somebody would call in before and somebody would take the call and they'd write on a piece of paper and they put it in a pile, and they would have a pile of 900 of these at the end of the day. So that started disappearing because there was no such thing, and they could see real time. Somebody would call, they say, "Yeah, we are aware of this tree and we're sending people," whatever they could start doing. And so the mayor could sit there and say, "Okay, we have 892 trees that have fallen on wires." So that's on a small scale what we started out with. So that was our basic premise, and it was enabled, of course, by technology, which had just come in. For example, mobile devices, Google Maps, the cloud. These were the enabling devices that allowed us to do something that was not possible perhaps 10 years before that. So that's how we got our start. But now when you think about what's happening, it's just on a totally different scale. And just to give you a brief thing, we are kind of, if you think about where we are, we've got about 300 customers, and a bunch of them, like about a third of them, are governments and counties. And those are the people that are really driving up our usage right now. They have more than quadrupled their usage. So on our system, so we have, you know, almost like five people logging, you know, joining into our system every minute during some hours. So this is a lot of people for us that are using our system right now. We, you know, again, here's where technology comes in. Because of the cloud, we are able to scale up to meet that need without people seeing much of an effect. Of course, we are not on the scale of Facebook or something. They are just kind of bursting out. They're reaching the limits of the technology they've got, as opposed to us. We're still very, very tiny compared to those people. So basically, if you think about it, the idea behind VOG is connecting people, connecting first responders, sharing information, and then figuring out where to deploy resources and managing the resources. So
where are you with these 130 of your customers who are dealing now with COVID-19 and quintupling the demand? Where are you working? Where is this being used?
It's used even in New Haven. I mean, the nurses of New Haven are using us for all the calls they get. I mean, they've got they're basically logging the calls, sort of putting them in different categories, taking action, and then making a list of things that they have to do later.
I apologize. So, you said nurses in New Haven?
Yes.
From where?
From the city of New Haven, the health department. The health department nurses are taking advantage of this. So they're on our system doing that.
And so how much are they working on that system? How many calls are they getting about these cases?
I think they're getting about 30 to 40 calls a day.
Of people who think they have COVID.
Different types of calls. Like we don't go much into what they precisely they do. But I mean, I think the people there, I think it's Jennifer Vasquez and Brian Weeks, who's an epidemiologist, and they are, and the director of public health, Marisa Bond, they're all basically on our system, looking at our system and tracking calls, and they have their own dashboard. And again, like I can, you know, let me take a look at the dashboard. I can tell you what it looks like. You know, it's got all kinds of stuff on it, like how many calls did they get, what did they do, so that kind of stuff is there.
Are they using it to track who else might be infected? Marisa Bond spoke about every time there's a case, they want to know who else has been in contact with that person. Okay. Yeah. Is the VOC platform relevant to that?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what they're getting also from us because of these calls, they can, as I was earlier telling you earlier, we're tied in closely with Google Maps. So they're getting addresses of people. So right now, for example, they can see on a map of the city where all these calls for them are coming from and also the category of that call. So they can see that real time as it's happening.
But it's also view. I mean, these are the calls they're getting. About like for instance, there was one that happened. There was a church event a couple, two Sundays ago, where one person died from it from another city. There have been other people who are being tested now. Would they use the dashboard for keeping track of people from that church and that event, or is that a separate database?
You know, I'm not sure whether they're doing it on us, but they certainly could if they, I mean, the capabilities there, for example, like, you know, basically what they could do on our system is if you can input the names of the people and perhaps phone numbers and emails, you can start monitoring them just via text, you know, checking on all of them automatically, you know, hey, press one if you're healthy and press two if you're not, sort of thing, things like that. I mean, you can definitely do things like that very quickly, yes.
And we're talking to Sue Graywall, the founder and CEO of VOC, originally called Graywall, and that's a firm in New Haven that works around the world helping first responders and others on the front lines of emergencies to communicate, share information, deploy resources, and keep track of a crisis. And what more important time can there be than now? And we're in WNHHFM 103.5 live stream at newhavenindependent.org. What other communities are you working in now with COVID-19? And can you give us a story with, you don't have to say the place if you don't want, or you can, where the platform helped save a life or connect people in a crucial situation?
You know, again, like as a platform, we kind of keep the privacy of our customers. So by and large, we do not know what's going on our system with our users, unless they choose to tell us and they call us and they say something like, hey, we're doing this, or they ask us for some help. Can you set us up for something? So, so privacy for us, you know, the requirements of privacy are really important. And we absolutely do not get into a customer's usage of our system beyond the numbers. Okay, so many people are logged in from the point of view of performance. But we really.
So how many communities are you now working with on COVID-19, and how many people are logging in?
In terms of people, since the start of this, we've had about 30,000 people log into our system, users log into our system so far.
And where are they now? You know, where else besides New Haven is this happening with VOC?
Okay, this is across the U.S. Some of our bigger customers are in the Bay Area. I mean, Alameda County is a very big sort of place for us. And one interesting case we've had is a town of Hayward in the Bay Area, and their health department is getting 2,500 calls a day. So they're at a different. 250 calls a day. So what they've done is they've created they're using us to manage a whole bunch of volunteers who are taking the phone calls and then taking the pertinent data and then forwarding it for action by the city or by some other agencies. And so they're managing the onboarding of these volunteers, the assignment of these volunteers to time slots, and then taking the data as the phone calls come in, all on our system.
That
which is a really nice use. Which is a perfect use, very easy to do. And we could set them up in about a day, and they've begun using it.
Must be very satisfying for you to have had an idea. I know you and some others left GE Engineers in 2011, I guess it was, to start Graywall, which became VOC. And now you're watching a tech solution you've devised and upgraded as the technology improves, you said the cloud and Google Maps. And it's really being used at a crisis that's the biggest of our lifetime in public health to save lives. Can you give me an example of something you learned over the last 8 years, 9 years, that today is helping, whether it's Hayward, California, New Haven, whoever else is using it, something you saw from an earlier crisis that is being used to help people manage data, get problems fixed, avoid duplication, something that is practically on the ground helping?
You know, I mean, that's a pretty, I mean, again, I mean, you know, we got to give credit actually not to our system, but really to the people that do the work. And we're just a small piece of it. I mean, we're just helping out the people that are really taking the risks that are on the front lines. And to the extent that we can help them, I mean, we are very pleased with that. So there are simple things that can do. If you had a picture of the 100 things that are going wrong, and you could see it, say, on a map, and you could see the extent of that on a map, the one thing you can do is you can take these and put them together. You can say, okay, these 10 things are happening in one place. So the team that goes out says, hey, there are 10 of these, go to each one of them, and they're all close to each other. So previously—
Clusters.
So clustering is a really important thing that we do for people, because that's where some of the other thing we do is, by getting all this information, data is really a very important part of making decisions. Data allows you to predict, data allows you to assign, and we have a pretty good sort of handle on bringing that data to the people. So you can know what your demand is, where it is, and how do you meet it. So then the other thing, one interesting thing we've done is, for example, the whole monitoring business of knowing where things are. So if you're getting information from many, many places, to have it just come to one place and be real time, sort of kept up to date, is a powerful feature. So we're having quite a bit of that going on right now. But yeah, and you know, the thing about us is that, you know, we always had dreams that we would be used in a very big way and for a crisis like this, but we can be used only to the extent that people are actually in there who learned how to use it and are set up.
Yeah.
Okay. And those are, you know, and when we look at the first responders and people around the people that are working, I mean, it's not that easy to make a change. I mean, when you take people and you say, okay, you're going to change from taking a note on a piece of paper and now you're on a computer, there's a big sort of bridge that has to be crossed. And how do you get people into that system hasn't been easy. But the good thing has been that since we started in 2011 to today, many things have changed. People are so much more comfortable with computers than they were 10 years ago. So what we're finding is that the intake of our system is so much easier today than it was 10 years ago. I mean, we don't have, and one of the big handicaps we had when we first started was people would say, hey, we don't want the cloud. We want our own server sitting in this room. Well, that's gone now.
Okay? Yeah.
So that's one of the things that's gone. And then you have people that basically, if you look at any community, whether it's first responders or others, people are generally satisfied with things they are. So what makes people change is some level of dissatisfaction and some kind of a push behind that. And that doesn't come easy. So the way we work is like you start out with the innovators and the people that are always dissatisfied and want to make a change. And you grow from there to the larger public,
And you've been doing that partly with, you've been doing user groups and webinars. So in addition to being the front lines of the crisis, I saw you had Dr. Marie-Louise Landry, the virology lab at Yale. She's talking about past outbreaks and how it's done. And Paula Kavathis, I don't know if I have her name right, immunobiology at Yale School of Medicine, about how the immune system responds. Is that in that same category you're talking about, or is that a separate effort to help people understand about how these kind of viral outbreaks work?
You know, again, like it's all tied into one piece. Our value is being of service to our community. And what we felt was getting stuff directly from the source was an important thing for us. I mean, so with Dr. Landry, I mean, she's the prime person at Yale New Haven Hospital who's doing the test. And, you know, she's actually been to Wuhan. She has people she knows over in Wuhan, China. And so, again, that caliber of people that we've got at Yale is a tremendous resource for us here in New Haven.
So what did she do on the webinar? What did she say? What did she tell your customers?
She basically scared us. So, but she told, so she shared with the different, you know, basically from the point of view of an epidemiologist, and she runs the virology lab here. So what is the lab facing? What are the tests? And you know, the basic message we got was that we were really behind in the testing and we all had to just pitch in. And what she was doing was also the same thing. She was setting up her own test, you know, not waiting for anybody else. So So that's what we learned.
So what's your sense of how bad it's going to hit New Haven in the next 2 weeks? I know we're about to start climbing up to the peak. Are you expecting hundreds of people to die, thousands of people to get sick? Do you think Yale New Haven's prepared?
I'm not an expert in this, but from what I've seen, I mean, I've been looking at a couple of data. I mean, I'm kind of a data guy, from, you know, like looking at data. And I see like a big difference, say, for example, what's happening in San Francisco versus what's happening in New York. And in San Francisco, we see nothing as bad as in New York. And the slope.
Why is that?
I really don't know. So, but I'm just looking at the data, and I'm just sharing with you that it is possible for us to mitigate the effects if we are quite draconian in how we impose basically the isolation right. business. That's what it is.
How are we doing in New Haven with that?
You know, I haven't been out, so I don't know. So.
Good, you're following it. You're taking good shape there. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been within 6 feet. Or, I mean, not even my, I think the closest I was about 12 feet. So I mean, even then taking walks.
I'm doing the same.
Yeah.
But what is the data showing you so far in New Haven?
You know, I haven't even looked. I'm sorry. I was plotting this out with my daughter in San Francisco. She was telling me the numbers online and for New York and San Francisco. And the two cities are so, so different. I mean, it is, it just gives you the two extremes of what's possible. Yeah. I mean, San Francisco seems to be going the Wuhan route in which they're going to just clamp down. And even the slope of the curve there, the way I could see it was maybe 1,000 infections a day, even 3 weeks out from today, which is manageable because out of that, maybe like 50 are going to be hospitalized or 60. They're already sort of going through the 2 week cycle on the people that were in there first. So it looks much easier. I mean, it's not as dire as what you're seeing at Elmhurst Hospital with the refrigerated right. truck pulling in.
That I mean, quite that a story. Is. And we have a refrigerated site. Truck here for at Yale New Haven for if there are too many bodies, but that's just a precautionary measure. Yeah. Do you think Yale New Haven is ready? Do we have enough beds, you think, and enough equipment?
Paul, I'm just not the expert. I'm just a computer guy.
You know a lot about data. Is data going to help us save lives? Is it already helping us save lives in this
data,
crisis?
The biggest change from between 2019 and today is data. The fact that we are able to get data, even if it's not real time in some places, we're getting it near real time. And we can base decisions based on data. I mean, that's the biggest change in 100 years in some ways, in addition to medicine and other stuff. I'm not saying, but, you know, from my perspective, that's been the big thing. So, again, you know, coming back to it, Paul, I mean, like, we are always going to have these kinds of crises on a much smaller scale. And, you know, looking back, hindsight is always like, wish we had been better connected, better prepared. But, you know, all the same, there's no better time to start than now. I mean, it always is a good time to start. And I think even today, as we kind of improve our data abilities, it'll help us make better decisions. I mean, for example, like if we can connect all the people that are, for example, we are the health department in New Haven now. very much on our system. It'll be just lovely to have all of Connecticut connected the same way. I mean, that way we could, you know, the governor could prioritize, hey, listen, something's happening in this town and we better go quarantine that town. So those kinds of things, I think, are what I think we should be doing rapidly. Uh-huh. I mean, that would greater help need. Us.
Yeah. Any parting thoughts, Sukh Grewal? Thanks for being on the front lines. Thanks for being ready through your entrepreneurship and innovation to help New Haven, Alameda, and others deal with this crisis. Any parting words you have for our listeners about this crisis?
The couple of things I would say is, one is that as the most developed and the wealthiest country in the world, it's our responsibility to sort of monitor these crises around the world. The CDC used to have a bigger footprint. I mean, the CDC is involved in you know, they have a big office in Ethiopia and Addis Ababa, and they monitor outbreaks over there for a long time. They've been doing that. But we shouldn't be cutting those budgets. And, you know, currently we are being used in Africa by four countries. I mean, Ethiopia, Sierra Leone, Uganda, and Tanzania are actually using us even today. And Ethiopia is one of the bigger users. I mean, in fact, the combined, all of them use us even more than any healthcare system in the United States does. So they're big users for our system. And the budget there got cut about a year ago, but we've left them, you know, we are basically leaving them running. I mean, because I think, you know, it's just a good thing to do. So they're still using us. And it helps them, because what they're doing is they're using cell phones to connect from rural areas, from rural, you know, the small dispensaries into a central system to monitor disease outbreaks as they happen out in the wild or wherever they do. So the parting thought is, like, we really have to be like the place where the world turns to for control of these things, and to understand how we do it and how we manage it. And we have to be on the front lines of this. I mean, for us, for Wuhan, I mean, this Wuhan happened in like late November. And, you know, again, when you look back on it, I mean, you know, we should have been there. I mean, we should have been doing this. You know, we should have started at that time. So that's my point, that we got to be more global in our outlook. And the other thing is, let's use technology, and that's happening anyway. I think the people in the US, you know, everybody's on Zoom, you know, a lot of people are. And you know, that points to the fact that we ought to make this thing, you know, available to everybody. I mean, it should almost become a natural thing, just like a phone call. Everybody should have internet. Everybody should be connected. I mean, we need to focus on that as well. So those are the two. And don't cut medical research. Please do not cut medical research. Do not cut medical research. We need biology. We need basic sciences to be in biology, because all these things that we do today came from experiments that were done in labs 30 and 40 years ago.
Sukh Grewal, CEO of VOC in New Haven, one of our great tech companies. How many people work in there now?
65.
Whoa, last time we checked it was 40. You guys keep growing. So your point's taken, that we wish the US were still paying attention to the whole world and helping out, but at least you're on the front lines doing that. And I'm proud to be in the same city, proud to have had you on the air today. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Grewal. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Stay safe and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Paul.
And I want to thank Harry Droz, our station manager, for producing today's program, keeping us on Facebook. It's been a little bit of a touch and go with that platform these days. Everyone stay safe this weekend. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio. Thanks so much.